Welcome to Into the Cypher State, everyone. This is the premier public broadcast of Galactica Network. My handle is citizen42.gala within the Cypher State, but you can, of course, call me Dave if you wish. And today I'm joined by my regular co-host, not Cosmos Hoss. Today we have Frederick, one of our lead developers, who is an equally fantastic guy. And I hope you have some wonderful conversations with him. He's got a massive interest in everything network states, cyber states, parallel societies, reputation, identity, and everything else in between. So we have some very special guests today. This is kind of a special podcast for us. We've been recently to the Network State Conference with some of you guys. Had an amazing time. Honestly, we're just looking for a great conversation. We're looking for opinions, just thoughts, whatever you want to spit into the void. Again, special podcast, special guests, and we're really looking forward to it. Just before we start, very quick disclaimer. Very important to remember that myself, Frederick, and any team members on the panel, we are your guides to navigating the cyber state. We are not your financial advisors. Our guests' opinions are very much their own, and nothing said on this space constitutes financial or investment advice. We finally got it all out of the way, so I'm really excited to get to the introductions, guys. Lee, let's start with Leon. I've been really looking forward to speaking to you, my friend. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, and very good to meet you and the crew. I'm still learning what you guys are all about. I had a really good meeting at the Network State with a few people. So we're actually builders, so I'd like to learn more, and then I can tell our story as well.
I'm looking forward to hearing it, Leon, and we're happy to share ours. We also have Alex Park with us today. How are you doing, Alex? Absolutely massive fan of the teaser trailer you put out. That's looking good, man.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to be here. And I don't know if I got to meet any of you at the Network State Conference, but it was really good. I think I met Harry there. I'm making a Network State film, and it's my job as an artist to kind of take in as much information about the world and then put it into a piece of art for people to watch, and then hopefully that opens up possibilities for them in their thinking. So I'm really, I'm going to be honest. I took your white paper and plugged it into ChatGPT and asked it to explain like I was in high school. And it had a really, honestly, a really great result. And I was like, oh yeah, there's all kinds of ideas in here that I want in my film. So just here to hear more about it and answer any questions about the film. And yeah, stoked.
100%. My goodness. Yeah. One of the things we need to work on is simplifying our stuff. We've got that 50-page freaking white paper, and then we've got another like 6 or 7 papers all on each individual aspect of the protocol, each about 30 pages long. We need to simplify these things. At the end of the day, we're building a parallel cipher state, on-chain infrastructure for real people. I think we can probably end it at that. We don't even need the white papers. We've also got Harry. Harry, my friend, we didn't get to meet either at the Network State Conference. There was just too many people and too many wonderful conversations going on that took like all the time in the world. There's not enough time to speak to everyone. How are you doing, Harry?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm having a good day. Yeah, very, very productive. We're building out a presentation for what we're doing in Lisbon in the coming weeks, the Web Summit conference. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to meet at the conference, but it's been cool. There was an effort before the conference to start organizing a Telegram group, getting people together. There was a lot of people that started organizing spontaneously meetups and dinners around the event. And so hopefully we'll kind of continue that momentum now and people can connect and build more relationships and learn more about what's going on in the space. So that's what brought me here, and I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
I'm looking forward to it as well, Harry, really am. And finally, we have Holzblock. I'm afraid I don't know who's behind the profile. If you can just introduce yourself, that'd be great.
Hi, yeah, here's Eric speaking, based from Germany. I'm in the space since 6 years, done lots of meetups, conferences in Germany, and I'm a builder, product owner, community manager, all that stuff. And I saw the call for this space on the Network State Telegram community.
I'm very glad to have you here, Eric. Really am. So I kind of just wanted to start off the network state portion of this show and get some opinions. First, I just wanted your guys' experience. How did you find the conference itself? Maybe we can start with Alex on this one.
Yeah, it was really great for me to go and see, you know, the way it was divided up, kind of by category of parallel societies, science. We had even a bit of medical in there, to kind of see a more fleshed out version of, you know, how are all these things going to come together? What realms are, how far some of those realms are in their development and which ones are very early. I had the benefit of being there with a friend who is totally an outsider to any of these ideas. And so I guess you could say he was kind of a skeptic. So he was an interesting person to go through that experience with, because I'm very, very much, you know, followed biology since 2018 and saw the development of this idea. He had before it was a network state, it was a Discord server called 1729. And then some of the early meetups in 1729, probably in 2021, we were, you know, helping him formulate the book, formulate ideas. So I'm very much inside baseball. So being there with a skeptic was good to get a perspective on, hey, why are they not talking about, you know, how much money this costs for this, or you know, he kind of had the vision to see an outsider, and that helped me understand what my job as a filmmaker was to help someone like him connect the dots. So I just really loved the variety of ideas there and seeing the state of development that they're all at.
It really was eclectic, wasn't it? There were so many, just completely, sometimes not opposing. Every single person there was at least developing in parallel, mm-hmm. but it was just truly eclectic, the minds and the thoughts there. Yeah, so I think it's actually funny you mention the book, because we were almost ignorant of the book for, like, I don't know, 6 to 8 months after its release. We actually developed the Cypher State concept maybe a month or two before the book came out, and it's just really interesting how many parallels there were with Balaji's vision in what we were building at the time. So we've basically just been quietly developing all this documentation, the general idea for an on-chain Cypher State for a few years now, and it's just absolutely incredible how it's all come together, and this amazing community is kind of formed behind Balaji, and it's absolutely beautiful to see.
Yeah.
So we're really looking forward to getting everyone together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a name for that phenomena where these, you know, people in totally desperate parts of the world kind of arrive at the same idea at the same time. I'm blanking on what that's called, but, you know, it's like someone will have a breakthrough in physics in Europe at the same time somebody, you know, in some weird area of the United States does it at the same time. Got a little bit of that going on, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. Leon, how did you find the conference, my friend? What were you up to while you were there?
Yeah, I got there and the crowd was fully formed. And so I really lurked at the back and went around the edge to just see how things were kind of running. I've run some big conferences before, so it was really run professionally. I was really impressed. And I think it was quite compelling, the speaker lineup. I guess I was a little bit disappointed the big ticket speakers were not in person. So that was, I guess, one comment. I'd have to say that they were those canned videos of Vitalik and the wink of eye was a little bit of underwhelming. But other than that, I think, you know, I was especially impressed by the late stage of the day, the speakers that he had around there. So especially Cody, I think Cody Sanchez, she mentioned this kind of need for the network state. All of us here with big brains, you know, we need a little bit of blue collar realism around the tribe, because nothing works without energy, water, and or, you know, proper sewage running. So there has to be, if you're building these communities, there's some pretty low tech but important things to get done right as well. So, and I thought she had a brilliant kind of takeaway.
Yeah, I love Cody's stuff too, especially as my history is in building in like physical building in carpentry. and in house building. So you know, before I came into the blockchain space years and years ago, that was you know, physical building and the understanding of the fundamentals of practicality and life, and you know, the stuff yeah. that actually requires to build something.
Yeah, nothing, was my bread and butter. Works, no, if nothing's working, you know, at that base layer, or what you would say, you know, layer zero, then you're really not going to have a good day. And so, you know, I'm an engineer, first principle thinking, but before that, I was a farm boy living in Canada. And when nothing is working, you know, and you've got animals to take care of, it can cause a real strife. So I think she brings a real practical reality. You don't need to overthink the opportunity. And I think a lot of resilience, you know, the whole reason why people want to actually build these different tribes or states or even a network way of doing it. We all still need this kind of self-sovereign ID, but, you know, self-sovereign identity, self-sovereign energy, and other ways to be in charge of your own domain. And I think I made a comment on one of my recent podcasts that the Dutch have got this kind of culture where the ocean was a forcing function on people working together. And, you know, if you didn't build the dike properly, it wasn't engineered properly, you didn't have the windmills working 24/7 if it had to, then, you know, real dire things would happen. So I really think the kind of Dutch economy, the Dutch kind of way that they do co-ops and neighborhoods are really quite appealing. There's, you could even do a case study on how this should evolve to different build-outs of the network state, both culturally and you know, in the implementation of a technology layer, that but very close to this layer zero, because shit has to work right in order for the rest of it to work.
100%. Yeah, fundamentals first always. Speaking of fundamentals first always, please like and retweet the space, everyone, for a start. And secondly, I have not done my fundamentals first and in the last few minutes, because I completely forgot I neglected to ask Alex about his project, which I'm super, super excited about. And I would love to just get a little bit of detail on the project before we go to maybe ask Leon about his, and then maybe we do it properly after that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, if you go to my profile here on X, there's a link to a 2-minute video if you want to do the deep dive. But you know, basically it's near future, and it's in a version of the United States that has just fractured into different city states, and it's from the point of view from a government employee. So it is somebody who is unable to participate in the city states, so they're kind of on the outside looking in. So you get to observe a functioning city state as this soldier. She's a drone pilot as she commutes to her job. It's on the surface. You know, I've been calling it a techno optimist hard candy wrapped with a dystopian wrapper. And that's just kind of my way of saying, at first glance, it looks like the normal dystopian sci-fi fare, but actually it's a very optimistic view of what's possible.
Okay, so she commutes to work to fight in wars remotely. That's a really interesting concept. I like that.
Well, it is an interesting concept, but it's totally just exactly what happens here in the United States. I have a lot of family in the military, so I'm pretty familiar with that world. You know, we have aviators who wear flight suits and live in Phoenix or in Las Vegas, and they live in a normal house, but then they put the uniform on, they drive to a base, and they plug into, you know, these Reaper drones that are flying missions in Africa, the Middle East, and they are engaged in warfare. And at the end of the day, they go back to their house, and it's, you know, supposed to be normal life for them. So it's an interesting concept, but it's based on a very real, you know, truth of how warfare is happening in the United States, and probably, I imagine, the UK as well.
Oh, what an incredible existence to build a film upon. That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm sure that would be very, very engaging for people, introducing people to that world. Yeah, so like we are just huge fans. So if you and I'd love to chat with you in DMs about a few partnership opportunities and other things that maybe we could discuss just to maybe get you forward a bit more.
Definitely.
I see. I'm not sure exactly where you are in the funding of the project right now.
Yeah, I'm about trying to, it's funny being at a conference like this with people startup ideas, when they hear I'm trying to raise $25,000, they kind of giggle and they're like, well, that'll be easy. And I say, well, you know, there's no return on investment. This is purely, you know, propaganda for this idea. So it's a little different, but yeah, I guess I should also add that the network state ideas that are explored so far are the main character Cameron commutes through a city state's border control. So you see what that looks like if a city state or a network state has some form of a border. You see characters transact using devices that are meant to represent cryptocurrency, and that they are somehow biologically tied. So it's kind of like, you know, a look into a future where your brain is tied in, your body is tied into to security in some form. And then there's a scene where, you know, she has the convenience of food being delivered with autonomous robotics, which is something that can only happen if you have a jurisdiction that allows robots to run around wildly. So, you know, it's a short film. You only have time for a couple things. So I had to be very specific, my choice there. But yeah, those are some of the network state ideas that I'm hoping to put out there in the world.
Absolutely amazing, Alex. Really, I can't wait. I genuinely can't. I just want to skip on over to Harry, because we haven't welcomed in yet. So Harry, how are you doing, my friend? And like, what did you think of the conference? What were your takeaways? Did you learn anything cool?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been following Balaji since 2013. He did a talk on exit at Y Combinator that I listened to online, and then he mentioned a book, Exit, Voice and Loyalty, by a guy named Albert Hirschman in that talk. Read that. So I've been following his ideas in the abstract for a while, but really always just thought they were very interesting, heterodox ideas that were theoretical. And so I'm in a transition phase in my career. I've been running a business the last 3 years. I'm exiting. I'm looking to figure out a new project. And so when I learned about the first conference happening, the Network State Conference, just made a ton of sense to come and check it out. And I think what struck me about the conference, just from a vibe perspective, is just how optimistic it was. You know, there's a lot of things that are not going so well today in the world. There's a lot of doom and gloom in the news. But and I think Glenn Greenwald mentioned this, just everyone there was so optimistic and focused on solutions. And a lot of the solutions were very practical and in the real world. So some of the projects I was most really interested in, I think, were Alex Rivas with Cover, the homes that they're building more affordably, the Baseflow, Luis working on additional passports for people. And then I don't think they spoke at this, they spoke at Solana, but the project Teleport around doing a Web 3.0 ride sharing business. So anyway, just a lot of really interesting builders working on stuff in a tangible way. And I just left the conference feeling very inspired and energized about this whole movement in space, and that it's going to definitely continue to grow and have a positive impact on, I think, both economies and governments, and how people organize themselves in communities.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about connecting people. It really is. Like at this base level, it's just trying to get aligned people together in an organized fashion, and make sure that we have some form of competition to these like social institutions that, you know, we might find problematic in some way, and that we you know, if even if we don't opt out of them, it's good to have the competition to force them, at least, you know, give them pause and force them to change. But hopefully, like at the end of the day, that we'll end up having that option to opt out into something even better. And that's everything, I think. Just the option to choose, possibly for the first time in humanity's history, which social institutions, which roles you most identify with, and then live with others under those rules.
Absolutely. And I would say, like, I mean, as somebody who's from America, the US, I like the country. I like a lot of the ideals it was founded under. And, you know, I've been just struck with the idea, like, if we can create healthy pressure on governments like the US, on other Western countries, where they realize, oh, we have to start treating our citizens better, I think it's actually like a positive and almost patriotic thing. So I think it, if we can put that sort of healthy pressure on governments, I think it'll allow the people that choose to stay in those sort of nations to have better lives and better societies as well. And, but it does seem like this whole trend toward digital nomading is huge. It's getting bigger. I had no idea that there were, I think one of the speakers quoted something like over 10 million Americans self-describe themselves as digital nomads. And that's not including people from Europe and other parts of the world. And something like 30 million Americans want to be digital nomads in the next 3 years. So there's clearly like a lot of energy and interest in this sort of movement in space in the real world.
Yeah, I found that those particular statistics interesting also. I mean, that's an awful lot of, it's got to be a decent percentage. Like, I know it's only going to be in the ones and twos, but it's got to be a decent percentage of the workforce who want to work this way, who just opting out of the grind, as it were, trying to create a greater balance of work, life, and family. I think people are just sick and tired of being sick and tired at the end of the day. So perhaps we'll just introduce our last speaker. Eric, how did you find the conference, sure. My friend?
Hi, y'all. Well, the conference was so insightful that I couldn't sleep the first night when I sort of went home early. And I was a little bit worried as well in some sense, in terms of that I have seen such conferences, or at least I had a couple of speakers which had this idea, this utopia idea of sort of having this decentralized state or their own little island. And sometimes it appeared to me to be more like a real estate project, and how those chartered cities were marketed in some sense. I'm taking this approach, I went to this conference more from this crypto approach, the cypherpunk idealist, or maybe even the crypto anarchist in some sense. And I thought maybe the whole network state conference, or the idea and the vision, is sort of at a point where lots of people are trying to sort of take it and use it for their own sort of or put their own understanding on top of it. I thought that sometimes there was this top-down approach, and for example, there those VC-funded ideas, those real estate projects for the top 1% on an island, for example, from Pablo Escobar, which is infamous for the Fire Festival, if you know that one, the one where lots of people, influencers, were scammed to sort of be at an exclusive festival.
I remember that. That was a couple of years ago, right? Yeah,
exactly. And everyone got stranded. And it's the same island, which was marketed as to be like a great destination and network state example. So in this sense, I was a bit worried about how those projects are sort of taking over this idea. But I can understand them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand your misgivings there. But I would have probably a counterpoint, I guess, mm-hmm. In that sometimes it does require what you might call wealthy futurists with really big ideas sure. and money enough to bootstrap an idea in order to get the momentum for other people to latch on and to take part. And this is, you know, we're talking about we're talking about the physical infrastructure side of network states here. And obviously that's the most difficult part right now. I think as far as the, what you were talking about initially, like the cypherpunk kind of ethos, the crypto side of things, the online digital communities who form together like network states together. I think that's I think the community side of things is equally important, but it's easier in the present. It's just an easier prospect with the infrastructure we have.
I agree with that. And that's why I sort of also wanted to sort of say that, yes, we have this top-down approach. We also have a bottom-up approach more from the community. We've seen as well those projects, Coup de Sac and the one in SF in New York. And I think there are as well plenty of other examples. The thing which sort of left this sour taste was, okay, who's supposed to live on for example, this one island where it was mostly marketed, hey, how this is the width of our tarmac and your private jet can land here. And I had to think about a very sort of famous movie, The Triangle of Sadness, which is, in short, a movie about rich people on a yacht and they strand on an island and they can't even sort of fend for themselves and sort of fish or start a fire. So I think that the bottom up and the bottom top down approach, they sort of have to meet in the middle. And I was thinking as well with some of the people from the conference, or at least from the way how they presented themselves, I thought, okay, I wouldn't like to sort of have my state or my island shared with them. And I think this is the point where this movement is maybe at the moment, that there are different motivations on why to opt out. I think the core might be to be among my peers or with my community, or in terms of protest. I think especially the US, the current United States of America, sort of have certainly this division and lots of motivation to sort of especially take a look at this movement. Things in Germany, of course, are not that much better. We had as well a recent small little uprising of so-called citizens of the Reich, who also sort of wanted to have their king. Sort of overthrow the government and stuff. So I thought, hey, let them have their own little island and sort of their own little king. And I think this movement is still sort of working out the right definition or how it can be put into place. So this was my takeaway from the conference. But overall, great. I love the people. I love the vibe. I love the whole operations from this standpoint and all the thoughts it brought me.
I don't have any doubt you do. I really don't. I think that's a very good personal takeaway. I really do. I personally think, from Galactica's perspective, what we do is very much is probably more in line with what you're thinking about than what the physical infrastructure builders that we saw at the conference are thinking about. But this is why I think the network state concept, proposed by Balaji in his book, is so powerful. In fact, is because it's extremely flexible in the possible outcomes that can come from it. It doesn't pigeonhole us in any particular way. It does have this focus on land ownership and borders and things like that. But it's not. It also includes the cypherpunk, the crypto, the ability to simply self-organize as sovereign individuals into community groups in the same vein as network states, but purely in a virtual space. It's the human organization that matters, I would say, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. We're building from the top up, from the top, from the bottom up, as you say. We're going completely community first. We've been building the protocol for 2 years now, at least. We've only just poked our head above water as far as social interaction goes. These spaces are part of that. We're trying to provide a platform that allows for genuine social interaction, real human beings interacting with citizen level rights and responsibilities with a blockchain protocol. I appreciate it. I do. I think a few people are going for that, are trying to implement that. But we've been working on our stack for a long time, and I think we've come up with something that's viable. So we're looking forward to getting that out there.
From a token engineering perspective, whenever you build a blockchain, you sort of want to have an objective function, so a goal. Like with Bitcoin, it was to maximize the network security. And I'm thinking as well about what could be the objective function for a state or a blockchain which is sort of built to support network states. Have you found a solution already?
Yes, yeah, indeed. I would be happy to actually hand this over to Frederick, but I believe the answer would be Sybil resistance as a main goal. Frederick, I don't know if you want to expand.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's trying to merge a couple of different aspects, because we're trying to build a blockchain. It has on the one side the same objective as, for example, Ethereum, with what kind of projects and protocols you can run on that. But on the other side, we want to bring and onboard personal and social data on chain. So we have something called zero knowledge certificates that can, for example, be an ID solution where you do a KYC somewhere, and then you get a soulborn token on chain that you can use to verify as a unique human. And with this arc, we're kind of building up the Sybil resistance that is needed by something like a network state to have, for example, a democratic voting system or meritocratic voting system.
Yeah.
And the last component we're also trying to build in there, that's, in my opinion, quite nice, is concept of reputation, that users of the blockchain and the protocols on it can participate in different areas, and then build up a reputation there that can also impact their, I would call it social impact, and maybe also then the voting power in the DAOs they participate.
And I think this concept is maybe something for Alex and his movie. So maybe even a bit sort of budget saving, when it's not about having a border, which is physically sort of keeping non-citizens out, but about identity. I mean, you could sort of have it all open, but if a stranger to this network state is sort of visiting this other state, they couldn't sort of interact with anything, anyone, because they don't have this access to this network with this identity or with different means of sort of logging in.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, like I was very much envisioning not a border control, like, you know, when you're kind of interrogated going into Europe or going to Asia, but at the border between, say, the state of Oregon and the state of California, there's a agricultural checkpoint, and you basically just drive through it, and it's really fast. They hardly ever ask you any questions, and so I thought having something like that, and then adding another I'm not sure what the element would be to kind of cue that there's a larger system at play, to verify identity. But to point to, why was that checkpoint so easy? Why wasn't that like a normal border control? And the answer would be, yeah, because they have implemented a platform like that that really provides the real security. I really like that idea.
Yeah. Have you seen the Black Mirror episode where this one actor is muted by everyone, so no one can see him, no one can hear him, and he's just like censored out from daily life, because that's this way of sort of public punishment. And I was thinking about that one as well.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sounds like if you violate something on social media in China, they can kind of just like ice you out of the system.
Not just China.
Yeah.
I think Elon as well showed that right or conservative accounts on X were as well sort of downtuned.
Right. Yeah. Right.
deplatformed in some sense.
Yeah, right. I only bring up China because the length that they go to is sometimes they'll, even if it's like an actor, they will go in and replace the face with AI with a totally different face for the entire movie that they're in. It's kind of like, it's very fascinating to see that.
Yeah, so far as well, maybe one more thing. So I've been as well to this conference and met Balaji through this other project, 1729, and the whole blogs he shared there as well. And I'm sort of went there as well to sort of see, okay, what is built at the moment. And another thing I sort of didn't sort of liked was that it was often about, okay, I think you always have three options in life. So either change something, or accept it, or leave it, opt out. And I especially thought when listening to Glenn Greenwald and the idea of sort of, hey, all the systems, all the media systems aren't working and so on. I was thinking, well, because Web 2 was doing such a bad job, right? That was one thing where I thought, okay, I mean, do we change it, or we leave it, or we sort of as well try to, and I definitely thought this conference was not that much optimistic. I thought it was more in terms of frustrated and sort of gave up on changing it, and rather let's build something else and oppose it. That was sort of as well my takeaway from that, sort of a little bit of, let's leave everyone else to their own broken echo chamber networks, and we build something new and hopefully better, of course.
That's funny you should say that, actually, because I spoke to Ivy Asterix at the conference. I talked to her quite some length, actually, and you know, she was kind of the same way. I think I may actually be using the wrong pronouns, but they spent the better part of a decade trying to work within the system to change it for the better and have it represent them fairly, and they just got sick of it, you know. They got sick of trying. They found out about the option of building in parallel, you know, in competition rather than opposition, making systems that are just better and demonstrably better enough that other people would want to coalesce around them and build and grow. They took that path. They took this path of building this network state kind of concept, this parallel society, this ability for people to opt out into something better. I think you've actually brought up a really good question, I think, for the panel in general. And I guess it's actually a question that I was asking a few people at the conference at the same time. Do you guys think, you know, in general, we will find ourselves in the decades to come as sovereign citizens of like network states, of these global communities that exceed the confines of our current social, political, and economic institutions? Or do you think that society as we know it will in some way overcome like all these challenges, all these failures, the corruption, everything else in between, to outcompete the network state concept and make it irrelevant? I'm just kind of looking for a more general opinion here, and on whether you think society is essentially too far gone, or whether whether we need these parallel societies in order to move forward as a species.
On which time horizon would you like to ask?
I'm talking decades and centuries.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think just in terms of thinking, I envision, at least in the world of the film, just a slow erosion and not a massive upheaval of civil war when people are wanting to form network states, but just kind of a slow erosion. I think a lot about, you know, at what point during the decline of the Roman Empire did they decide, you know what, this area that is now modern day Bulgaria is not worth the blood and treasure. So we have an outpost here, but we're just gonna, you know, kind of pull back. And they handed over the keys to the car, so to speak, to the local population. And they were able to run it as they see fit. The only difference is they didn't have the infrastructure of the Roman Empire. So I think the difference is now is as centralized systems erode away at the margins and we build our alternatives, it's kind of like that, except we have the ability to run it in a more efficient and a better way, because there isn't all the, we will be free of the kind of ossified regulations that the centralized system is bound to. So I see it as a slow erosion, one thing at a time, you know, that concept of unbundling and rebundling. One thing I thought a lot about is, you know, for me in Seattle, when the pandemic hit, it was kind of ground zero here. I saw supply chain insecurity. I saw, you know, the social fabric erode away during the George Floyd protests. And I was really left wondering like, okay, I don't feel any security as an American citizen that I'm going to be caught in a safety net. I feel pretty like naked in the wind here. So, you know, it really made me think in the same way, hopefully, that I belong to Gmail and all my email is there and I have these different subscription services. Maybe I can have a subscription service in the future where that's where my healthcare is, just my healthcare is managed. Maybe that's it. And then maybe they add something else and, you know, we get more of a system where, you know, eventually you build all the pieces of the ideal state that you want to live in the aggregate of all the different services. So yeah, that's kind of my point of view is I think it's a slow eroding away and you'll have many network states for different utilities at the beginning. So I'll belong to a network state just for maybe my retirement. I'll belong to one just for my medical care. And maybe I'll belong to one that offers me the ability to be a dual citizen in another country. So I don't see it in the near term as a jumping into a full, you know, country system, but kind of a lot of different, like a la carte model, if that makes sense.
I think with the current trend towards urbanization, we will certainly will have much more of those Dubais and Singapores. Definitely with some bad examples, like the one in Malaysia, I think it's called Forest City, north of Singapore, which is just a Potemkin village in some sense. No one is living there. And so this trend will certainly happen. And I think that especially those special economic zones, those cities, this business model as a city will become much more adopted and certainly attract all the talent, all the create a brain drain for those nomads, and we will have this network effect. And I'm worried, of course, as well about that in some sense. Me from Germany with that social security net, which is taking you and that we will have much more the sense of everyone fends for themselves. Me as someone who has two passports and maybe as well good income can sort of move around very quick, but and as well to those economic better situated places or to communities which are where I sort of feel more connected to. And I think we will see that people moving to the place where they have their peers, where they see their community. But I think those city states or those beginnings will certainly sort of be challenged by the Dunbar number, that you sort of not able to sort of grow beyond a certain amount. So I think there will be like a threshold or a barrier for some of those early projects that fail. And I think to get there, we have to have this operating system and really have city states as open source software, so you can really learn from each other. And if this is happening, if we have this operating system, it will certainly get adopted easier. But I'm not sure where it's possible to have those economic zones. So those are my 5 cents to that question.
That's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Please go.
Yeah, I'll jump in as well. I think a lot of what Alex and Eric said resonates with me. If you think about the Roman Empire, you know, it's technically dated to have fallen in 476, but it really fell over hundreds of centuries or hundreds of years. And if you're curious about like when did nations arise as a concept, that really happened with the Treaty of Westphalia in the 1600s. So modern day nation states have existed for close to 400 years. So I think I really like what Alex said. I think it'll be, and anything like this will be slow trends on the scales of hundreds of years. The one wrinkle I was just thinking about as hearing them both talk, I think it will be interesting to see how the pace and rapidity and the impact of AI affects societies. And then also if there is some sort of breakthrough with energy production, whether it's fusion or I feel like those could be two counter.
Sorry, Harry, we've lost you a little bit, I believe, on the connection. If you can just check connection, we'll retry.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine now. Yeah, you were just skipping out. You sounded a bit like a robot for a moment there.
Thanks. So I was just saying, I think if energy gets cheaper, that would, I think, be a drag on this movement. But then if AI is more disruptive and happens faster, I could see that spurring this movement on. So I was just wanted to share that thought and kind of get the perspective of some of the other speakers on how they think those trends will affect this movement and community.
Well, that's a great question. I'd love to throw that over to Leon, actually. I haven't heard from Leon in a bit. I'd love to get the perspective on maybe how you think artificial intelligence fits into all this.
It's a required infrastructure. We're going to be short on electrical power to run all the AI chips we need. It really is, we're living in this kind of singularity, whether you want to track whether or not we're in a simulation at the same time or not. It does look like we're pushing the boundaries of what we can all understand concurrently all at the same time. I really do see that the AI and the LLMs, eventually AI and what will become AGI, will be accelerated in both industry applications and then ultimately consumer-facing applications. I really think the governments are overreaching and trying to make it protective. It does, of course, favor the incumbents for that. So I'm really favoring the open source derivatives of these innovations as well. So really, permissionless innovation is going to be required for the thesis to play out, I think, on a fair basis. But this all needs a lot of energy and a lot of compute to make that happen. So we're going to need energy systems and distributed ways to deliver these scenarios as well that can be within your own societies. So it's a high level point. I'd have to say I'm still learning about all of this concurrently. It's really exciting to be doing this, but I'm a little bit scared for my sons what the world is going to turn out to be. You know, it's a lot of unknowns now. Whether it's you're worried about money printing and the dire situation of the fiat system, or you're dealing with the climate change and just being able to have, crops in the ground so you can build and feed an economy the next year. So there is really going to be a huge degree of change. And it's physical systems that the AI will have no way to fix, no matter what they might recommend, they're still going to have to do a lot of this boots on ground, revert back again to the blue collar people to get shit done. So at the end of the day, I think we need to have a balance and lean into it. So and be wary that it just all can't happen in the metaverse.
100%.
Bless the farmers, the truckers and the plumbers, eh? Please go on, Alex.
Y'all, I just have to hop off. So I just want to say thanks for hosting and would love to stay in touch and hope you guys have a good rest of the discussion.
It's been absolutely wonderful having you, Alex. Really, really appreciate you coming. And Oh, sorry, that was Harry. Do apologize.
No worries.
I'm going to have to hop off too. But on my Twitter handle, we've announced some new material. I'd love to be able to showcase what we do to digitize and tokenize solar infrastructure to allow communities to use solar and any blockchain they want to spin up on that solar infrastructure to really drive their own permissionless innovation, their own layer for their self-sovereign state. And we will containerize some of our solutions. We'll get our hands dirty and work with solar communities here in Europe and in Australia. We run a foundation. 1% of our revenue will be going to community and for good projects. So watch this space, and I welcome anyone to DM me and if they want to have a separate chat. Thank you.
It's been absolutely thrilling having you up, Leon, really. Sorry, that was for Sunified, correct?
Correct. Sunified Energy. Yep. It's sunified.com. Thank you.
Wonderful. You have a very good rest of your day. Okay, man. Okay. I think one of the things we can maybe do just to round out the space then, as we've got a few speakers left, we can go on the maybe could just continue on with that line of questioning. We spoke a little about the AI aspect. But maybe we can talk a bit more about the infrastructural layers and the kind of stuff that we saw at the conference there. I think one of the things that I did see a lot of, I think you mentioned, Eric, was the catering to a lot of the digital nomad stuff. We saw quite a few of these, like, customize your own kind of working space and pods and that kind of thing, with which the idea, I suppose, is to create, you know, an individual node, which can then form a community once there's enough of them. What do you think of that kind of concept of building at that level and building communities around these standardized nodes?
Yeah, this is great. This is happening. As well, in Germany, there are some companies which are not related at all to Kevin or to Cover or to any other of those. They just sort of see the trend to the lifestyle of sort of being a bit away from people or being as well among your peers. So we have this trend as well happening here that villages are actually turned into communities again. Influencers are sort of buying cheap plot of land and are attracting, well, their followers. The same as well is happening with old farmhouses, etc. So this is happening on a small scale. And as said, this is probably just something for friends circles for who will be under this Dunbar number. But I think open sourcing or licensing or putting those things as well under Creative Commons is a way to have this blueprint available to easier distribute the idea and all those building blocks which are necessary. And I think this approach is great. It's missing, of course, the incentive structure around it. I believe it would be very difficult, of course, to sort of have your own token mechanics, economics, which are incentivizing to build your to build your own village, and to have miners to and all those other things which are necessary to incentivize building that.
I think that's something the conference itself was very helpful, especially on the networking front, because so many of us virtual cryptographic based infrastructure providers for humans were able to get hold of a lot of the actual physical infrastructure builders and community builders. So that was very helpful, because I think that you're quite correct in that's the weakness of these grassroots efforts, is the lack of organizational structure. I think that's something that Galactic would actually be very good at. What do you think, Frederick?
I also think that this would be really good because the infrastructure is not only the physical infrastructure, but also the infrastructure for communication, information, finance, the governance of the system you're building up. And I think that what we are trying to build with Galactica would be really nice for these systems, because we provide the standardization and the software tools so that projects can build their own DAOs with the ID solution behind it to have the civil resistance, the reputation, the voting system. And I'm really curious how this will turn out in the future, because at the moment we are in a stage where we have our own DevNet, where people can try out the technology, give us feedback. The first partners can try to integrate it. But I'm really curious what's in the future when more and more projects are going to join and give us feedback.
I have a question to this group as well in terms of what's more important, the tech, the capital, or the governance. And I think it's easy to have the money. It's probably, I mean, you can build those things as well. So the tech is also available, but we're missing still an appealing governance model. DAOs are still experimenting, and I think we will see there, especially hopefully next year, a successful DAO, which sort of found the secret sauce to really have this viral economic appealing model, which is sort of really helping those communities grow and connect.
I couldn't agree more. It's exactly that, and that's one of the reasons why we've been building what we've been building. It's why we have like an entire paper, like several papers, in fact, on our governance design, and why we chose to go with a meritocratic system. I think that's also an interesting way we could collaborate with physical builders and physical communities, because you know if we gathered enough small communities together and got them to become essentially members of our cipher state. Then they would all be able to participate as citizens of Galactica. They would all be able to earn a universal basic income based on the output of the protocol itself, and they'd also be able to crowdfund in a decentralized manner, using the meritocratic governance features. You'd be able to crowdfund your community, your expansion, your projects, everything that goes on in building a physical community. It might be a good way of moving forward with some of these physical communities. Sorry, I'm just kind of like brainstorming right now myself.
That's great. No, I just wanted to jump in there and say it's a lot of these ideas start out as novelties. I think it's Chris Dixon that said what the nerds do in their free time on the weekends, in 10 years, everyone does like during their daily lives, 9 to 5. There's just a lot of ideas right now that are novel and maybe in the wrong direction. But if you can take the concept and then place them in something like to build a network state towards that end, they become very, very useful. I'm thinking, for example, of the NFT called Nouns, the Nouns DAO, if anyone's familiar with that. They auction off a noun, which is, it's just like a little 36 by 36 pixel art with eyes in sunglasses. And then after it's auctioned off, that's your ability to vote on proposals that people put forward. And the money you spent auctioned off on that noun goes into a treasury. And anybody in the world, you don't have to own an NFT, can put a proposal in and then get it funded. And I mean thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it all has to benefit the Nouns community, which is just a brand. I'm new to it. I don't really understand like if there's any other larger visions, but it appears to be, you can get a float in a parade that features the noun NFT, or you can get a clothing line. But take that idea and then put that into a cipher state. That's really fascinating. You get the NFT from the cipher state, and then that allows you to fund proposals that benefit the cipher state. You know, if it were something like, hey, we want to buy this land here and start, you know, growing our own beef or our own, you know, soybeans to then sell and then put more money into the treasury. These concepts are so adjacent, but sometimes they feel miles away when you look at them on the surface. But I feel like there's so many interesting novelty ideas that popped up in the NFT mania that are just ripe to be taken into the network state space.
Apologies, guys. Can you hear me at all?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. My Twitter client is frozen, so I just hope I'll stick around. absolutely, Eric. This is something that I think you kind of just accidentally described our citizenship. So that's pretty much exactly.
Still got no.
Still frozen, it seems.
Yeah, okay. Dev was talking about our citizenship model. This is basically one of those enablers you talked about. So similar to getting NFT from nouns, you can get a citizenship in our Galactica network. And this basically onboards you and brings you into this governance system, and also unlocks a couple contribution methods, like you said, getting funds from the treasury. And right now we're running, we are trying to bootstrap the community to start this set of citizens. And we have it in Discord. People can participate in the developer network, give us feedback, do some quests, spread the word, and so on. And this basically the first step, how people can contribute to the community and then get rewarded with the first waves of citizenships. And then the plan is that as we get more mature, can launch more parts of the technology, that this then gets replaced by the on-chain reputation system, where people are rewarded for using the network and benefiting it.
Cool.
That's amazing. And based on the ChatGPT translation of your white paper that I read, so I might have totally wrong, I could join the Cypher State and still be anonymous. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, that's one of the central parts, in my opinion. Because we're trying to onboard personal information and how you interact with society on a public blockchain. So the privacy aspects, I think, is a requirement for that, because otherwise you would put too much private information in the public. And that's why we're also investing so heavily in zero knowledge, because it allows you to prove statements about your personal data while keeping the essence of personal data private.
My apologies, guys. Can you hear me now? I'm sorry. I think my Twitter client died.
No worries.
I don't know where the conversation went, but I hope it went well.
Yeah, we covered as well sort of the idea of how to incentivize contribution. And I'm actually had an idea when listening to Frederick, that if you want to as well create incentive to sort of people joining or your state having new citizens, maybe it has to be like stake your crypto and sort of get your sort of network state tokens, which are sort of as well representing part of the GDP of this network state, right? So whatever is produced and whatever is sort of coming out of this is as well sort of having creating this first come first not serve but the early adopter bonus for that, and just an idea on that.
Absolutely. I mean, there have sort of bootstrapping phase, in, you know, in almost every aspect of building anything. But the overall goal is to have, you know, this meritocratic access, this this ability to, you know, for value to be derived from effort, rather than, you know, just these false tokens.
Yeah, you give them sweat equity, like tokens, which are as well sort of exactly the thing which you give them for rewards, but not as a token form, which is sort of mercenaries who are sort of joining your state to sort of just farm tokens and are able to sort of sell it directly. But sweat equity is sort of a way of rather have it allocated, but not being able to spend it for a certain time. I think token engineers can definitely find a way and simulate everything around that the best possible options in this regard. But yeah.
100%. And this is one of the reasons why the we built the protocol to be so composable and so customizable. You can essentially you can query the reputation root contract, for example, for just about any reputation metric you decide. So people can decide their own reputation metrics and build their own social structures and use the protocol how they want to use it within the confines of the rules we provide. It's a very I don't know, like I say, it's just very composable and very usable for a lot of people. Okay. I also heard you guys talking about Swedenimity access. I love that about what we're building right now, to be honest. It's awesome. It's like you can come on board as two types of persistent identity. So like a persistent identity is just any blockchain identity that has like a history, like a verifiable, immutable, and reliable history to it. So you can have like a pseudonymous persistent identity, as anyone who just like joins the permissionless blockchain, or you can have a private persistent identity as a citizen, and then you can start interacting like in all these special social use cases. Like you can do all the social use case, most of the social use cases is just a pseudonymous persistent identity, I guess. But as a citizen, you can do like a lot more composable and customizable stuff. And you can also interact with like compliant dApps and interact with the real world without compromising on your privacy. So I think that's really cool.
It reminds me of the idea, this is a big Balaji-ism of history running in reverse, and that, you know, going back to the era of science where it was anonymous and you had to attack the idea and not the person. I mean, that's one of the big benefits I see of having a system that allows you to be anonymous is having to address a proposal for something maybe in your community or in, you know, digitally in your network state, cipher state, consider the idea instead of understanding the person behind it. And I feel like if we could do that, now, you know, we'd have a much better society if we were able to separate people from their ideas. That's just a very exciting prospect to me of being able to have that as a protocol.
You're getting me excited as well, dude, because this is one of the first institutions that we built is the what we call the Academy of Sciences. And it's exactly that. It's that we've got like multiple and redundant decentralized entities. For which you can apply for apply for funding for any proposal you wish, and then it's almost exactly as you describe. But then when something gets through the funding process, they get it in KPI based stages. Again, there's like four, there's, I think there's four different decentralized entities that control and make sure that it's all kosher, and check each other's balances, and then after it's like been funded. You get like they get funded, and then part of their output on the network goes back into the universal basic income pool and goes back to people with high reputation. It's just a beautiful thing when you start getting stuff that works.
Yeah, and I mean just think about going back to when will we see a fully functional network state? I believe that it will be not software as a service, but society as a service models that you'll be subscribing to. But imagine if you had access to a cipher state that offered this, and you were able to verify things through that system. And then people who were not in that system are basically coming to you and being like, you know, I'm not part of this. I'm listening to the, you know, the news or Twitter. What can you, I know you're in this cipher state that has this ability to verify. Can you tell me what this means? I think that's really fascinating too, where we might see network states, institutions that have the ability to verify things cryptographically, verify science, verify news, that then other people will be looking to. So not just, I saw it on X or I saw it on whatever news organization, BBC, NYT, Wall Street Journal, but I actually verified it with my friend who's part of the cipher state that has this, you know, on-chain anonymous, just verifying the science. So I do know that, you know, X is true or Y is false. Yeah, that's just very exciting to me. And then also back to the point really quick of how does AI play into a network state. I really, really would encourage if you're wondering about how a small network state can thrive within a existing country, listen to the Conversations with Tyler podcast with Ada Palmer and listen to her description of how Florence during the Renaissance, tiny city state with no real standing army, was able to essentially go toe-to-toe with the largest empires. And just to, you know, try and get compact with that, in case you haven't listened to it, it's that they had massive innovation that all the other states needed. So even though they were very wealthy, the financial center was there, France, England was not incentivized to go and conquer Florence because that's where Greek was being revived. That's where technology for bronze casting was. That's where, it was a knowledge center. And so they weren't unattackable for that reason. So if we get a cipher state network state, maybe that builds an AI that is just so valuable that maybe, for example, the United States government doesn't like that San Francisco recovers, they have a tech revolution and they do not like what San Francisco is doing. Maybe they're not going to do anything about it because San Francisco has an AI that's very valuable to the United States defense contracts or treasury or something. And so it's just sort of like this uneasy tension, you know. That's kind of one version I see it going, which is sort of like the Ada Palmer Florence model, which is, yeah, we do have the state capacity to crush you, but you have such valuable innovation. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. Just like multiplying your power by leveraging your strength. That's really good principle for the network state like paradigm, I guess. My goodness. I'm absolutely adoring this conversation. It's given me absolutely loads to think about. There's just so many facets to all this, and just the organization of humanity into something that resembles a usable structure. There's so much to humanity. right, guys. I think we'll do some final thoughts. We've got probably coming up to the witching hours of Twitter Spaces at the moment. I'd just like to say I really appreciate everyone listening. If you could just give us a like and a retweet on this space, we've had some really, really strong conversation today. And I would like to get that recording out to as many people as possible. Just helps us with the algorithm. So if you can give us a like and a retweet, that would help greatly. I'd appreciate it very much. Maybe we'll start with Eric. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation today, my friend. I really do. I've absolutely adored talking to you. Do you have any final thoughts on anything we've spoken about or network states, anything in general?
Well, thanks. I appreciate as well the invitation and kind words. And yeah, sadly, we have met at the conference, and I think we need those conferences much more. And I put this as well in my little feedback for Balaji, that we need more community building and management around this to really pull together on all those topics, and also sort of help with those scissor statements to find out, okay, with whom and then which end of the rope am I pulling to really sort of have incentives and motivation aligned. And this is something, especially on the digital realm, where relationship building and trust building is a bit more difficult, has to be has to be moderated in a way which, with tools which we might not have yet, digital tools, certainly, of course, of social tools and processes and governance forms. And I look forward to those infrastructures and, of course, the users for them. That's it. Thanks.
No doubt, man. No doubt. I couldn't agree with you more on the need for more community, just community events in general, online and off, regarding network states. So I think the network state conference itself came out of the blue for us. I mean, we were pretty late in getting our tickets. We almost weren't able to come. I'm just very glad we did. But it was I think it was like organized maybe 15 days, like 20 days, something like that, before the event. I think a bit more planning, many more events of the type, I think will go a long way into like getting people like us digital infrastructure layers, the community builders, the infrastructure builders all together in one room and actually leveraging each other to get greater and faster results. Alex, mate, it's been absolutely wonderful having you up. Genuinely has. If you have any final thoughts on anything that's been spoken about, please.
No, I really appreciate you having me. This is, you know, part of my reason for going to that conference was to gather more perspective, more ideas to include in the film. Part of my decision to go to that conference, obviously I had been following Balaji for a number of years, and was a fan, but it just going to that conference felt like one of the most real and prescient things I could do. I'm a big fan of the inner war years in Europe, specifically, the people talk about the Weimar Republic in terms of inflation, but I think about the Weimar Republic as just a hotbed of amazing ideas. You had the Bauhaus there, you had all these amazing artists and thinkers, and, you know, Albert Einstein was on the board of directors there. They were all friends with, you know, Stravinsky and Kandinsky and Walter Gropius. And you had the Dutch influence of Mondrian through De Steele coming down. I hope that's pronouncing that right. But going to the Network State Conference felt like a version of that, where everything's a wreck, but instead of World War One, it's everything's not a wreck from World War One, everything's a wreck from, you know, whatever you want to call the many catastrophes that are occurring right now. And we are gathering to figure out what to do next. Where do we go from here? And yeah, I just hope I can provide a story for people to reference and to onboard more. I use this term not as a pejorative, because I certainly consider myself a normie, onboard more normal people to this idea. Thanks for having me, and let's just keep building.
Hell yes, sir. Hell yes. I love from you what I love from a lot of this community is, again, the optimism. The doesn't even have to be like the technological prowess. It's just this incredible flexibility and the ability to see a future for society beyond like the drab and the gray and the accepting of norms and of the status quo. It's just a beautiful thing to see so many people coming together with a building growth mindset rather than just living with what you got. Frederick, mate, I'd love to hear your final thoughts, dude.
I'm really grateful, not only for the conference, also for this the space, because there's a lot of inspiration and new thoughts. I really like getting as input. And I'm really excited for what is happening in the space that is getting so physical, so real. In my opinion, this has a really great potential of how it can shift the perspective and unlock new possibilities for innovation, regulation, and so on. Yeah, and I really hope that what we're building with Galactica Network can contribute in this direction. And Thanks,
Frederick. I really appreciate you as always, dude. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. You have been listening to Into the Cypher State. This is the premier public broadcast of Galactica Network. We are building a cipher state for all people on this planet. We are hoping for all of you to click on our profile, check out the website, join our Discord, especially if you don't do anything else, just join the Discord, have a chat, see what we're about. That will give you the opportunity to also to earn your citizenship through social contributions, no money involved. Your effort yields value. That's the whole thing. So yeah, if you want to check out what we're about, check out the profile, check out that big old name of ours, galactica.com. We'll be happy to help you out if you need any help with understanding. As Alex said earlier in the stage, we have a lot of very technical documentation. So just speaking to us is generally the best option until we figure out the best way of communicating ourselves in a relatable and understandable manner. If you can also check out the pinned tweet, this is just Balaji's post from back when we did the conference. I think you can probably see myself and Frederick in there somewhere. It's like a Where's Wally game. It's wonderful. But it was a really great experience. If we have another event like this, specifically regarding network states, parallel societies, whatever, we will make sure that we post it heavily on our socials, and we would love to see you there. So this is actually a weekly space. For anyone who's not aware, this was a special episode regarding the network states, but we do this weekly every Thursday. We are moving the time to 9 o'clock UTC in the evening on a Thursday. So that will be the regular time from now due to daylight savings. And we hope to see you next week. Please drop yourself a like and a retweet on your way out. We have really appreciated your presence here, listening to us all this time, learning, enjoying, and hopefully having a good time. I wish you all a very good weekend, and thank you so much to our speakers. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Eric. And we will see you next time on the next episode of Into the Cypher State, everyone.
Thank you. All the best. Good night. Bye. Thank you.